It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, what's up, friends? Thanks for streaming the Outkick Bets podcast with Jeff Clark. I'm the host, Jeff Clark, and we got another tripod here to break down the NCAA tournament 2024.
Now is the perfect time to use three-man weave.
Man, but tripod.
You didn't let me use it during football because you were like, wrong sport. Here we go, on a platter, three-man weave. Didn't use it. Unbelievable.
Well, as you guys heard, that's Dan Z, college basketball betting analyst and a fellow gambling
degen.
He's the second part of this tripod. And the third part is making his basketball betting podcast debut. He was here for the whole 2023 NFL season, financial analyst from Fox News, Renaissance man, Scott Martin. Scott,
yeah,
welcome back, buddy.
Mean regression fan and the guy that puts the try in the tripod, Jeff and Dan. So thanks for having me back. I'm glad we're still friends. And let's keep making some money for some folks, huh?
I hope so. You are probably pretty giddy about the Sweet 16 schedule. So there is a stat that's been passed around a million times at this point that is probably guiding your betting portfolio for Sweet 16. And that stat is favorites went 15-1 straight up last week, or in the second round, excuse me, and 11-5 against the spread. That is a Scott Martin mean reversion stat.
It's coming, yeah. And I'll tell you what's funny about it. There's two things to look at, first of all, Jeff. The one thing is, and Dan and I were talking about this too, is there was a crazy imbalance. And a lot of those folks, especially early on, so like say on the Saturday games, a lot of those folks are public bettors and they got rich. But here's the thing on Sunday. Some of the Sunday favorites that won were not public fades. So we talk about this a lot. We talk about the favorites in the spread, the favorites in the public light. So Sunday started to flip. So that was a better day for the model than Saturday was, which was an absolute bloodbath for the books, for folks like me that try to fade the public. So I'm looking at your eyes and your little twinkle there and showing that we're probably going to get that continued mean regression back to the middle, which means that the books are probably going to clean up this round, as you mentioned there.
I just want to say I cleaned up on both Saturday and Sunday. So if you're going to listen to anyone, maybe I'm the guy, because I'm not on Scott's side where I just fade the public, and I'm not on the public side where I just take the public. I just pick winners. That's what I do.
Oh,
I just pick winners.
Sure.
That's what I strive to do. I appreciate your honesty, Scott. The conference tourney was a bloodbath for me, but I've rebounded here in the NCAA tourney. I'm 8-5. Still just down 1.3 units, though, on March Madness in full, 11-11 in all the games that I bet. So got some work to do, but my bracket's intact, which is usually something worth bragging about, but not this year because it's pretty much all chalk. Scott, how many brackets do you have and how are they doing?
I'm happy to say I've got one, Jeff. I got kind of tired of the bracket thing. When I was growing up, when I was in high school, when I was prom king, et cetera, all that fun stuff, I was putting out mad brackets to the girls, mad brackets to the NCAA. But I just get tired of it, and then I lose track of who I got where if I put two different brackets out, or three or four or five like Dan might do. So I just do one.
21.
And, there you go. It's a perfect number. And so I just put one out, and I've just got UConn, which is, like you said, the chalk of the chalk. And I don't know. I'm in an office pool, and I'm probably like in third. So middling, but if UConn wins, I'd probably win because I think I've got UConn and, I don't know, man, Houston, I think, if they're even not on the right side of the bracket. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I'm not a big bracket guy either. I did one bracket just because it's fun to track the one bracket. Dan, you are a non-bracket or a non-purist when it comes to this bracketology stuff.
I would argue that I'm the ultimate purist and you guys are the dirty ones who just do one bracket, which is stupid because, again, Scott, you're a numbers guy. Like, you're not going to nail a bracket. And even if you do, honestly, you just got lucky. Like, that's the way it goes. So the point of doing multiple brackets is to come up with
certain scenarios that you like, but know that there's going to be some coin flips along the way, and then adjust off of that. So that's why I do multiple. It's not like I try to get every possible Final Four combination in my 21 brackets. I probably had 12 or 13 teams in 20 brackets that I consistently went Final Four with.
See, that's what I might do, though. I might actually change the probabilities, though, to where I would try every combo. I mean, not every combo, but let's say there's 10 teams that could get to the Final Four in your mind. I probably would try to get every probability into each bracket, because if you get that Final Four right, that's probably the ticket or the key to winning the whole darn thing wherever you're at.
Yeah, and you're someone who really likes being right about these sports argument things, and I'm a little disappointed in you having 21 different bracket arguments. Like, you got to just be okay with being wrong 1 year, or in my case, 20 straight years. So,
nobody should ever be okay being wrong, Jeff. I mean, that's why we're trying to do this thing as we do today. But
goal,
I think there's ways
the goal is to
better
pick
play
winners.
It. Yeah.
The goal is
agreed.
To pick winners, man. I'm in a bracket pool with, like, I think there's 1,400 brackets. It's $5 a piece. I did 20, $100, but to win like $5,000. Like, I'm trying to win $5,000. I don't look at the guy because it, the way that it is on CBS Sports, sorry to give a shout at CBS, but we do use their bracket.
What's up?
Piece of shit.
But it just has your name and the number. Like, it's never like Jack Robinson 6, bracket 1, $5,000. He's like, oh, I got to give that back. That was bracket 6. That wasn't my, like, one bracket. Like, no! If Zanzacheski 10, 17 bracket wins, we fucking stoked. What are we doing here? What is wrong with you guys? This is a money-making endeavor.
I think you changed my mind for next year, Dan. And you know what? If there's a Sweet 16 pool out there, tweet it to us. Type it to us in the comments, because I'll jump in and put a
couple dozen brackets. I'm in the Survivor. I'm in two Survivors.
Yeah. Like, Survivor's Jeff, cool.
What are we talking about here? You guys...
I'm not in a single bracket pool.
Myself now.
And
I'm disappointed in myself.
When I joined Survivor... like 5-6 years ago, it kind of ruined any bracket betting for me. But I don't hate your strategy, knowing what I know now. I didn't know you were in a bracket pool with 5,000 people. So I'd feel a little bit different, but I don't know. I'm kind of a mark when it comes to college basketball. I get my one bracket. I usually have it busted by the end of the first weekend, and I move on with my life. It's like, fuck it. Whatever. I don't even like the sport that much anyways.
I think there's ways around it, and I think that's multiple brackets. So next year, I'm changing my stripes. But anyway, it's this
year
now.
I hate that, too.
So.
I hate the, idea of my bracket being busted on, like, Friday afternoon.
Yeah, it sucks.
Like, oh, I guess this tournament season, which I've waited all year for, is over.
I know. It's just, I just blame myself. Like, I got to be less dumb. Just be smarter and pick better.
Yeah, but that's impossible for you. So
it can't
I don't
be.
Understand.
Yeah, it's too random.
For 20 straight years, I've been stupid, and I don't know. Mm. Right now, I feel pretty good, but and I'm sure
you
it'll.
Do.
I'm sure it'll.
Ones, twos, and threes in the Sweet 16. Nice job, dude. Good way to really see what was going
to
happen.
Way to chalk it. Yeah, way to chalk it
beforehand.
Hey, my final four picks aren't all chalk. I only got one seed in there, or one seed in there. But yeah,
you got UConn.
Yeah, I got them to
which
win.
Which is the one.
So.
Yeah, which is the one of the one. Good. Okay.
Again, which is pretty much the most public play in college basketball that I can remember.
History. Yeah, in history.
I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
We'll
maybe
talk
since
about
North Carolina them. In 96.
They're part of the Thursday slate in the East region. We'll talk about them second. But first, we're going to talk about the West region's first matchup, Thursday, March 28th, 6-seed Clemson. Going against 2-seed Arizona. It's in the Crypto out in L.A. The spread right now is -7, -7.5 for Arizona. The total is 152.5. I'm gonna give you guys 6 bets, 3 in each day, and this is one of them. I'm gonna lay it with Arizona. I got -7 earlier this morning. That's what I'm being graded at. I'll give my explanation for why. Do either one of you like a side in this game or a total?
Clemson.
Same.
What? All right, cool. What?
Too public. I mean, Arizona's too public. I mean, like you just said, Jeff, everybody's on Arizona. It's an easy one.
I don't think I said that, but fair enough.
Oh, I'm putting words in your mouth, but you will. It just looks too easy. I mean, the spread, I would think, is actually looks pretty fair, but it just looks like you got a little bit of juice on I mean, I guess now it's actually pretty even, -110, but you see a lot of the public already jumping all over Arizona's push. This one up from 7 to 7.5. And I just think Clemson just is getting written off because of the season they had, the complaining they've done. but they've had a good tournament, and Arizona's bound to blow it because they usually do.
I agree with that, and I also agree that I think somehow, some way, the ACC was actually a little underrated coming into this conference. And if you look at, you know, people like to do this thing where they're like, oh, the Big East is 6-0. It's like, yeah, they have a 1, a 2, and a 3. Like, none of them has played a team that isn't a double-digit seed except UConn's one win over Northwestern. Whereas the ACC has outperformed its seeding in a couple of spots. And NC State is in the Sweet 16 as an 11, the team that went on a run and won the ACC tournament, won two games. Like, yeah, they beat Oakland, but they had an upset in the first round over a 6 seed. They've outperformed their seed. Clemson has outperformed its big seed time by beating a team that everyone loved. They were underdogs in the first round as a 6 seed and smoked New Mexico and then upset Baylor. And, I mean, yeah, obviously North Carolina and Duke did what they were supposed to do. But, I mean, by my count, that's 8-0 amongst those four teams. Like, I put that against what the Big East has done.
Anybody
so far
else? And, Dan, those are two teams you mentioned with the ACC representation there that everybody's kind of forgotten about. And that's why everybody's jumping in Arizona here, because they see the seed. They think of the Pac-10. They think of this game out in L.A. And that's why, too, I think Clemson just comes in here with a little bit better chance of pulling this thing out than Arizona does. And certainly Arizona, typical of blowing stuff at this point in the conference or in the tournament. And I just think Clemson's on a better streak here with regards to where they're seated, the points they're getting. And we've already seen them outperform, like you mentioned, with regards to the spreads that they've already gotten this tournament.
And I told you guys last week, Scott, you weren't here. We talked to OutKick college basketball expert Trey Wallace, who attends many of these games. But people who don't know Arizona that well, which is most people, don't understand Caleb Love. The Caleb Love blow-up game is coming. Like, it's coming. He is going to go 2-for-14 from the field, continue to jack up shots, and he's going to cost Arizona their run. I think there's a chance it comes in this game. If not, they're going to lose to North Carolina.
I don't think they're as dependent on Caleb Love as you seem to make him think that they are.
It's not about being dependent on him. It's the fact that he's going to miss 13 or 14 shots that he shouldn't take. He takes bad shots, and it's not about being dependent on him. That's 14 empty trips.
I don't think he's going to have that bad of a game, at least not here.
He does that, dude. He did it in the three games leading into the tournament. He played like absolute dog poo, and they went 1-2. And actually, he started out the tournament terrible, but they were playing a 15 seed. So, you know, eventually the talent won out.
In the Pac-12 tournament against USC, he was terrible. He scored 2 points, I think, in that game, 32 minutes. And still
that's bullshit,
tried to build.
The ACC or the Pac-12 tournament, because look at what Clemson did. That conference tournament doesn't mean shit.
So that's the role that Caleb Love can play. When he doesn't show up, the whole team doesn't show up. Even against Oregon in the that Friday game right before the tournament in the West region, like they just don't. You see teams that rely so much on a guy to stir the drink, and it just doesn't seem to be that kind of situation where if Love doesn't show up, nobody else will, in my opinion.
I don't think they're that reliant on him.
North Carolina removed Caleb Love and went from out of the tournament to a number one seed and easily got into the Sweet 16.
They didn't remove him. He didn't get expelled. He transferred to another elite program.
Addition by subtraction. North Carolina is better without Caleb Love.
100%.
They have the ACC player of the year, right? What's his name? RJ Davis, who's a good basketball player.
He's a good basketball player.
I mean, very good. I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
He's the best guard in this tournament. You always talk about guard.
Not the best guard in this tournament.
He's the best guard in this tournament.
Absolutely
for sure.
Not. Absolutely
who is?
Not.
Who's an
guard? He's not even the best guard in his game. We're going to talk about that in a second. Mark Sears is better than him in most
Sears
of the ways.
Who's an guard was pretty good last Saturday, wasn't he?
I mean, I like Arizona's roster profile. They got four shooters, four ball handlers. Well, the white Swedish guy isn't so much of a ball handler, but shooter around a legit big. Amar, what's his name? Balo? Dude's double-double center, great defender, legit seven-footer. You know who disagrees with you? That's the market. Arizona, despite being a two seed, is the favorite to win that region over North Carolina. Why do you think that is? Do you think that's a bias?
I think the market's wrong.
Okay.
I think market's wrong. I think that's a public overreach, and it's also because it's out west in LA, and I just think it's too much hype.
That's
and
a great
the
point.
The public doesn't know what Clemson's bringing.
No, so, that's a great point. And let me school you Midwest, East Coast schnooks here, because this goes over a lot of people's heads. Arizona is going to have home games here. Like, they are packing out the Crypto.com arena. I've met a lot of Arizona grads and alum out here, and I haven't met very many North Carolina grads or alum.
That's because they don't have graduates. Yeah
it's a lot harder to get into North Carolina.
It is.
Though.
It's way harder. Way harder to graduate.
Right. Oh, fair enough. That doesn't diminish my point, I don't think.
The smart people didn't move to L.A. Smart people know to stay out of L.A. at this point.
That's all good and fine. All the dumb Arizona fans are going to be there yelling for the Wildcats.
And drinking, yeah, if they can.
Arizona, 6-1 versus KenPom's top 25 teams, plus 15 scoring margin. Also, here's a little racial stat for you. Clemson, three white guys in their starting five. Three white guys.
The Jeff.
Sometimes, yeah, right.
White hate is my favorite. Yep. It's my favorite subplot in college basketball.
White Castle, Jeff Clark.
Jeff will just text me like, dude, I decided to watch college basketball tonight and I turned it off because I saw four white guys on the floor and I was like, I'm not watching this. I'm not watching white guys play basketball. I'm not doing
watch
it.
Northwestern. But that's another reason, though, too, Jeff, that this mean reverts. Like, these are the type of games, especially as we get deeper in the tournament, when the spread looks pretty big, that games like this just flip on the other side. So I'm all Clemson all the way, man.
I think Clemson – I'm surprised you're saying that. I'm interested in what betting splits you're looking at, because I felt like this would be one of those bargain public dog things where they get slaughtered. It feels like the books are begging for Clemson money. I mean, plus seven's
a
big number.
They are, but it's low enough. Yeah, I guess, but it's also low enough under 10 to where if you tease it or buy it down, you know, people are like, okay, 7. It was 7, I think, to start.
What kind of fucking degenerate teases college basketball games? Come on.
I thought that was your pleaser teaser stuff that you were sending me over freaking middle of the night.
I hit a sweet alt spread parlay on Sunday. Six legger, baby. Actually, it was a six leg clean sweep until Houston blew it. I had I was on fire this weekend. Both of my parlays where I picked all the games against the spread just for fun. Like, I bet the games and I bet hefty amounts on each game.
What kind of odds did you get on it? 40?
What?
What kind of odds did you get on it when you were finished with them? Like, did they pay out?
Yeah, it was like 20. They were each like between 20 and 25 bucks to win like a grand.
Yeah, sweet.
And
40-1.
Both lost on one leg.
Oh, damn.
But that's
round robin that shit. Yeah, round robin that shit, baby. Anyway.
I should have. Yeah. But I was already betting on the games individually. I I know I'm going to revert to the mean, which means you should ignore everything I say because I went 12-2 in games this past weekend.
Holy
I can't
shit.
Bet on just for the only reason the two games I didn't bet on because I live in Connecticut and I can't legally bet on. I couldn't bet on Yale, the Yale game, and I can't bet on UConn.
Same with Illinois.
Man, so all right, 12-2, I like that. And you're on Clemson here, though, and you're thinking mean reversion.
It'll be 12-2.
No, I just like Clemson better. I'm not a mean reversion guy. I think Clemson's plenty good enough to stick with Arizona, and I'm factoring in the Caleb Love game, which I think's coming.
I know you've been saying that for weeks now. All right, let's go to the next matchup in the East region. Here, Thursday, tip-off is around 7:30. Well, actually, what time is it? Yeah, 7:40, your guys' time, East Coast. San Diego State, 5-seed versus 1-seed UConn. I got nothing on this game. I mean, the spread is UConn minus 10.5, feels right to me. Over-under is 135.5. I lean to the over because I think people will look at, like, Aaron Kate Dole and that girl giving out the team total under last week and mix that with a little bit of San Diego State having like a legit defense and maybe trying to slow the pace down. So I feel like the over can be an actual contrarian play when it usually doesn't work like that. But I just keep re-popping UConn to win the national championship. That's how I'm betting them because there's no real value in my opinion or not a lot of value in betting them game in, game out. Scott, are you going to take the points? Are you going to lay the points? You got anything on this game?
Well, I'm taking the points. This is actually a good model play that I would highlight in our discussion is San Diego State. Just totally outclassed, outmatched in this game, getting 10.5. The open was 9.5, so the public has just driven this thing up to 10.5. And similar kind of argument with Arizona in a way about how the public knows who UConn is, loves them, thinks they're beautiful, and just doesn't give a whim about San Diego State. And just like you said, I think the game could be a little bit slower. I think the game could be a little bit closer, and I'll just take those 10 points and ride that into the sunset because the public believes that UConn's going to blow them out like they've pretty much blown out everybody else.
Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I don't have a lot here either, mostly because I can't legally bet on this game, so I don't care that much. I think UConn's going to win.
Are they going to win by 10? I can't legally bet on any game, so...
Okay, well, some of us, you know, try to follow the law, and
this,
I'm actually...
He sounds like Ohtani's translator. Are you working for Shohei now? Wow.
I actually...
Those L.A. guys, man. Those L.A. guys and their illegal betting rings.
Wait, what's a little wire fraud and bank fraud? No problem. Tax evasion.
I got to run. I'm going to go pay my taxes right now. So I got to actually go.
I could call the FBI.
I could probably find the guy he paid $4.5 million's phone number to. You know,
I bet you he's probably in protective custody, so to speak. I don't know if he's even out there running around right now. I'm sure they got him.
Scott, I'll do a little cap tip to you for being willing to take San Diego State and going against the grain. I know that's your whole thing, but I don't know. This is a tough spot.
It doesn't
here.
Feel good. I mean, it feels like an easy one because it feels like UConn's going to blow them out. I mean, San Diego State lost 10 games this year, and one of them most recently was New Mexico. And that was home against New Mexico, I think, on the 16th of March. And they just had they had some games where they just didn't show up. So, I mean, that's kind of the scary thing. But I still believe that the spread is large enough. And sometimes, as we've seen in these games, guys, you get these spreads that are 12, 13, 14, and the teams don't really give an F at the end. So they're just kind of like farting around, and a couple guys do. And lo and behold, a team rolls off 5 points and the game gets down to 11. They dribble the ball out and everybody's like, oh, damn, that was 14 and they didn't cover. So I like the points here.
Between free throw shooting, coaching, officiating, all the play stoppages, the end of the games get weird and it's tough for them to cover these big numbers. That's one of the issues that I would have with Arizona, even though I laid the number.
Yeah, and the free throw shooting is a great point, Jeff, because we saw free throw shooting all over this past weekend about how just guys were not converting. Guys that were shooting 80% from the stripe are missing the front end of 1-on-1. I mean, one of the worst front end misses I think I've ever seen was your boy, Dan, Dante, missing that front end of that 1-on-1. For some reason, he got the inbound pass from that freshman guard on Oregon, and that cost him the game. So that happens all the time, and I wouldn't see it not happening here at some point.
One of my favorite ways to live bet college basketball is betting an underdog when they, like, late in the game, if you look and an underdog has all three 1-on-1s to give, I love hitting the underdog in that situation because I always assume there's going to be a couple of pointless possessions, and I mean literally no points, plus no clock. The 1-on-1 in college basketball is what is really – exciting about college basketball, quite honestly, because it allows teams to pivot. Get back in games they don't belong in. But it's also what's extremely frustrating about betting college basketball is watching, especially when you bet a favorite and they're cruising the whole game. And then what you're talking about happens where, you know, a couple missed free throws here, a couple late buckets that don't matter. And suddenly, you know, you're -8.5 that when they were up. Oh, Houston, by the way, that was mine, up 13, I think, with like 3 minutes left, ended up going to overtime. Like that should not happen. You're a number one seed. You're up 13 points with 3 minutes left, and you go to overtime. That shouldn't happen. Should never.
Same with Oregon. Yeah, same with the Oregon game with all the momentum in the world, and they just farted on the court. So I agree, and that's a great thing to bring up. And especially as we get deeper into the tournament, too, guys. A lot of guys get to the free throw line and just feel tons of pressure on. They're on the road, or they're, you know, the crowd's against them, or whatever's going on, and all of a sudden it's just like nerves get in there, and you've got spaghetti coming off your hands instead of the basketball.
So let me remind you guys. And give you a little caution about Scott's betting strategy. So Scott is pretty strict with the numbers and the betting splits, and he's a big believer that just higher volume, eventually he's over the long run, he's going to win, right? So that's why essentially you're more willing to take the points at San Diego State because your model, however you configured it, whatever your input says, like over the long haul, these types of plays win. So that's kind of how you're going about it.
Yeah, because the public doesn't win, and the public bets the easy bets that look as easy as they come, and they're just not the way they are because Vegas makes them that way so that people dive in, and if you get enough of those, you'd end up coming out on top.
Yeah, if you're worried about day-in, day results, Scott's strategy is a tough one to stomach, but Scott's looking at it over the long. Yeah, he's firing out several bets every day over a bunch of different sports. So, all right, moving along. Second game in the West region, Friday, 9:40 Eastern standard tip off at the Crip again. 4-seed Alabama playing the Fighting Dan Z's UNC. UNC is now 3.5
future national champions, by the way.
They're now 3.5-point favorites. Total, I didn't check this, but I'm assuming it's the highest on the board, 173.5. Alabama plays great offense, gets up and down, but really struggles defensively. UNC is good on both ends of the floor. Are you laying it, Dan, or are you just like repopping North Carolina to win the region, the national title?
No, I'll lay it here. Okay. And the reason is because one thing that North Carolina does extremely well, and better than a lot of teams, what makes them a good favorite is RJ Davis shoots 92% from the free throw line. Cormac Ryan shoots 90% from the free throw line. They have two guys they can get the ball to who make free throws late, which is huge when you're going to take a number like 3.5. Any number really in college basketball under 10, you got to have a team that can make free throws, because that could end up costing you. But also, I do think North Carolina is the best team in this tournament. Sorry, I just do.
Fair enough. I have a disagreement.
I can't
with
wait
there.
To go head to head with. Are we doing head to heads here? Because like, I want to go heads up with you on Arizona if you'd like, Scott. I know you're gonna. I guarantee you're gonna be on Alabama here. That's just. There's not a more Scott Martin play on the board than Alabama here.
There probably isn't. I am on Alabama, as you guessed and deduced. I've got it at 4.5 with a little bit of extra juice on Alabama on the book where I am. And yeah, I just think it's one of those things where the public just sees that as North Carolina's mojo. But Alabama, I think, is tougher than people think. They've had a pretty tough season. They've won a couple big games as far as like just big matchups that they've stepped up in. And I think this is going to be no different. And the public doesn't want to give them any credit yet. So that's where I'm going to be.
I'm also on Alabama. Similar analysis in terms of public is hammering UNC. I think they, according to pregame, they're getting over 90% of the action. But from a basketball like breakdown or basketball logic standpoint, I guess, Alabama plays really good offense, really good shooting team, and they're going to be able to run their offense because UNC is 310th in defensive turnover rate. Mark Sears is actually the best player on the floor by PER, points per game, offensive rating.
This is all I don't watch these games analysis, by the way, from both of these guys.
Pringle. Let me tell you
exactly what's Alabama beats teams when they can outrun them. And here's the interesting thing about North Carolina. North Carolina is a really good transition team that it might not show up in the stats sheets, but North Carolina runs on made baskets more than any team I've watched this season. Like, they turn made baskets into fast break and transition points, which is absurd. They can run with Alabama, but they do everything that Alabama does except better, and they defend better. And RJ Davis is absolutely the best player in this game.
I think they're going to need more defense than they can bring, because you look at Alabama's results, you look at their stats, and I mean, Alabama can keep up. And I'm telling you, if you get Alabama to just keep
everyone up. Everyone except Cormac Ryan for North Carolina can defend.
Right, but I'm telling you, dude, Alabama can get up to that defense and put them in tough spots. So, I mean, if you just look at Alabama's big games where they've run hard, they've had teams that have challenged them. They've overscored. They've overproduced a lot of their expectations as far as the overs, the point totals on the team totals. So I just think North Carolina is going to get more than they bargained for. And I think Alabama walks away with this one winning.
I do like the over here, even though it's high, because I said, I think both of these teams will run. And so I think there will be a lot of points, which is another reason I'm happy. I'm not like I'm fine laying points, because it's going to be so high scoring. I think Carolina wins this like 91,
yeah, for sure. I mean,
that wouldn't even hit the over.
No, it wouldn't. That's actually maybe I'm on the under. Kind of funny. Yeah, the lowest point total that Alabama scored in the last, let's see here, 15 games was 81, and that was home against Tennessee, which was the fourth team in the country at that point. So they can put up the rock. They can put it through the hoop. So I just think there's going to be a lot of scoring back and forth, and I think that benefits.
I think it's unbelievable to me that you two are backing a team that gave up 96 points to College of Charleston. Like, just that alone.
Those were late points.
they gave up 96 points to College of Charleston.
I think like 20 of those were in the last like 2 minutes because all the reserves came in. I mean, College of Charleston, that game was 104-79 with 3 minutes left.
Let's look at let's,
that was
let's
one
look
of my
at,
best bets, and Alabama beat the shit out of Charleston.
They did.
And took my
let's
money.
Look at what Alabama. Hold on. Let's look at what Alabama has done just over its most recent games. They beat Grand Canyon, a 12 Great. Seed. They beat Charleston, Grand Canyon. A 13 seed. They lost to Florida, took overtime to beat Arkansas, lost to Florida again, lost to Tennessee, beat Ole Miss, lost to Kentucky. So they have 4 losses and 4 wins. Their best win is Arkansas, Grand Canyon.
So,
and you guys are Florida. Like they're going to lose to North Carolina.
So can you explain the line? Because I feel like there's some mispricing
yes.
here. UNC was 3.5-point favorites against Michigan State. Now they're only 3.5 against Alabama. Alabama is definitely a better team than Michigan State. So what can you explain?
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, not according to like KenPom. It's they're right next to each other.
I'm shocked at that. And I think that's also the trick too, Jeff. We talk about this in NFL. When you go up to the window and you're like, hey, let me take the Chiefs in this game. And they're like, well, okay, great. It's a pick 'em, or it's -1, the Chiefs. People go crazy and say, I'll bet everything, including Dan's house, on this. And that's when that spread is set for the trap for the public. When they walk in there and say, there's no way that North Carolina is not going to blow them out or cover 4 or 4.5. And that's, again, why I'd put money, heavy money on Alabama to even win this game.
Let's talk.
I plead guilty to not watching college basketball. I watch most St. John's games, some Big East games. I'll watch a high-profile ranked matchup every, I don't know, week or two in college basketball. But I am not fooling the audience, or at least not trying to. You watch so much more college basketball than me, and your analysis in terms of like the sport and the players is much sharper than mine. I'm just kind of going off what I see, and I wrote about this. I'm parachuting into college basketball. That's what I'm doing here. But
like, Alabama hasn't beaten a tournament team. Like,
but I think that's the whole weird thing, like Jeff brought up, Dan, is why is the spread so easy then? Why is this thing? I mean, look at the money line on
it's
Carolina.
Simple. You just look at the
140, 150.
This is what I'm trying to say. I think what we have learned this year, there is a renaissance this year on these metrics of the KenPoms of the world. There's something a little bit off. The Big 12 showed us that you can rig those metrics, and they did it. And then they went to the tournament, the Mountain West. Look at where those Mountain West teams were all ranked in all these metrics.
Horrible.
New Mexico should be above Clemson. L. BYU, top 20 team. L. Maybe these metrics, like if you look at these spreads in this round, just look at it. Like North Carolina on KenPom, +26. Alabama, +22.5. What is that? 3.5. Okay, there's your spread. Does it mean that that's where they're getting it? When you go, where does the spread come from? It's pretty simple. And if you look at all of them, they all kind of line up with that.
Well, hold on.
Arizona,
I'd be surprised they don't know better than that.
Look at Arizona. Look at Arizona, Clemson. Arizona, +27. Clemson, +19. What's that? It's 8. What's the spread? 7.5. Okay, so these spreads are lining up pretty good with what the analytics folks are basically saying. This is what it is.
Yeah, but also to that.
But those have been wrong.
But to the
that's what's risky about it. I think Vegas is smarter than that.
Right, to the same, but
smarter
to the,
than that. How?
But to the same point, Dan. Vegas doesn't have any biases when they're launching their spreads. So KenPom also is just looking at the data, and he's saying there's not that much of a difference between Alabama and North Carolina.
The problem is, you guys, I look at it from a conference standpoint, and I look at the conferences, and I go, because college basketball is a tricky sport. These teams stop playing other conferences in December.
Yeah.
They haven't played each other in 3 months. So the only, and these are different teams. You have like, oh, they beat, you know, Michigan State lost
in Maui.
In November. Like, right. I don't care. It's almost irrelevant. Like it's almost irrelevant at that this point
team.
In season. So the only thing, Jeff, hold on. The only thing we can do is look at these conferences and see how they perform against the other conferences. To me, the ACC was underrated by all of these metrics. The SEC was overrated. Auburn, clearly, I got sucked into the Auburn trap. I picked them to go to the Final Four, and I was like, oh man, I screwed that up. KenPom screwed that up. We all screwed that up. They weren't that good. Kentucky, one and done, out. What has the SEC done in this tournament that makes you think that even if you said UNC and Alabama are in the same place in their conference, that I'm taking the ACC team for sure?
It's about time that an SEC team steps up like Alabama. And I think also, though, too, Vegas, remember, wants to put the spread out there where they almost get that 50-50 split, and they never do, right? I mean, most of these games go heavy public on one side or the other. This spread has enticed the public to be all over with their grandma and grandpa and everybody else in their family on UNC because it looks too easy, and that's where I'm not going to be.
Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Scott on – well, I guess I'm definitely with Scott on this one in terms of picking Alabama. I mean,
you promised.
To your point, Dan, I think look, guys, Alabama had a
North
better
Carolina,
nine.
It's risk-free investing. That's all I can say. If you want free money, you bet North Carolina.
Risk-free Reese.
Yeah. Total risk, no return.
Alabama had a tougher non-conference schedule than good. North
in
Carolina.
In November. Oh, no, wow. Woo!
Well, so
in
what
Maui,
do you,
yeah.
So what the do you – I mean, I don't know. You're saying how they're going to perform against – you look at their non-conference schedules, right? That's what
no,
I thought
you
just said.
No,
so you
said
don't pay
irrelevant.
Attention. How is it irrelevant?
You look at the postseason. You look at what these conferences do when they all start playing each other at the end of the season, which is the only time that it matters.
That's November, all recency bias, though.
It's –
you look at how they're doing at the end of the year. The only how these conferences play against each other at the end of the year, the only thing you're going off of is two games. That's it. It's just the NCAA tournament.
What makes the NCAA tournament so fascinating, though, is what I've been trying to say. It's why people love it, because we have no idea, and then it ends up just being.
It doesn't matter, though.
It's the recency. All of the information we have, that is all the information we have, which is why it's so wild and no one knows what's going to happen. Especially pre-tournament, we don't know how these teams, how good these teams are, because we don't know how good your record is. How like everyone looked at any Big 12 schedule you looked at, you were like, every win is a good win and every loss is a bad loss.
Yeah.
Big 12 can't like Houston squeaked by, blew a
game. Kansas is horrible. Kansas was embarrassing.
Scott,
Kansas was terrible.
You just kind of made Scott's point for him.
Like, yeah, I know he did. It doesn't really matter.
There's no number. Like, who cares? Don't even look at
you're
it.
You're going to try. Yeah.
Just look at the numbers and fade the public.
Watch the basketball games. Watch the basketball games. That's what I'm telling you to do.
I wish we were all hanging out on, what is this, Thursday night, and somebody was losing a lot of money in front of me, but whatever.
Next game. Mm-hmm. What is this? East Region, Illinois versus Iowa State. Illinois 3 seed, Iowa State 2 seed. Iowa State went from 2.5 point favorite to 1.5. The total is 145.5. I think I'm kind of stepping in it here, but I'm gonna go Illinois money line +105. I'm assuming, Scott, you're gonna say something about them being a public dog, and I don't know if you have a play in this game one way or the other, but what are your?
If you followed me throughout the years, you know I'm a South Dakota girl at heart who grew up in a ranching family, and I know that America First isn't just a political movement, it's a kitchen table issue, quite literally. I always support American family-owned companies, ranchers, and farmers who put high-quality meat products on the tables of their fellow Americans. And my friends at Omaha Steaks are the experts. With Father's Day right around the corner, what better to give dad than the experience of world-class Omaha Steaks with the deluxe Father's Day gift for just $89.99. This package includes a mouth-watering assortment of dad's grilling favorites like Omaha Steaks Butcher's Cut Top Sirloins, juicy boneless pork chops, deli-style gourmet jumbo franks, and their legendary Omaha Steaks burgers. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code OUTKICK at checkout to order the deluxe Father's Day gift and get 4 additional burgers absolutely free. That's 24 unforgettable entrees for just $89.99 when you use promo code OUTKICK at checkout. Get quality steaks for the fathers in your life. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code OUTKICK and get the deluxe Father's Day gift plus 4 free burgers today.
Thoughts?
No real play in this game, but it's close, actually. It's a little bit closer than I thought. I thought after Illinois' performance in the last couple games that has been on display, just because nobody really knew who Illinois was because the Big Ten sucks. I live in Illinois. I know it's true. I grew up in Ohio. But this public spread is pretty even, but it's a little bit heavier on Iowa State. So given that it's so close, I really wouldn't lean on it yet. But it looks like Illinois is going to be the play just because they're under the amount that the public is on as far as Iowa State goes, which surprises me a little bit. I thought more people would be on Illinois just because of the Dan's recency bias, if you will.
fair enough. So pass.
What's the spread? Mm-hmm.
One and a half is what I got now.
Okay. Yep. So let's look at KenPom.
Pick them.
Iowa State, 26.8.
Illinois 25.1. Boy, that sounds really close to 1.5.
It actually sounds like you should be getting more points. Maybe 3.
Tarvik actually has it down to decimals, and so does Eric Hazel.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
But what's your point, Dan?
That's what these spreads are. When you guys are like, why is this spread the way that it is? It's they know that the most basic public thing is just to go look at like a KenPom, look at the efficiency numbers, and make your
decision. I think you're out giving before the KenPom numbers up, though. I don't think that's out before the spreads out. The spreads out right when the matchup's set, isn't it?
Yeah, but
KenPom. Yeah, KenPom is automated as well. There are Bart Torvik, Eric Haslam. They're all automated.
I think it's called Dan Pom now. I mean, he's basically taken over.
I need to go up with my own ranking that takes this stuff into account because I've had enough of this. I've had an annoying year with these people, and I've defended them and their analytics, but there's a clear hole in their model. Like there's a hole in their model.
So then again, making points for others on the pod. Then we should fade the KenPom model. And if that says, who says it says it's better? Iowa State, is that right? 29 to
it agrees with Vegas. 7? It essentially agrees with the Vegas.
It agrees with Vegas. We're now 3 games in, and all of them have been within a half a point. If you took the adjusted EM from KenPom, subtracted it from the underdog, you would have this spread.
Right.
In all 3 so far.
Right. So then we figured out who it agrees with. Now we got to figure out who to fade, and that's the public. So we're fading, I think, Illinois on this one still. Just FYI.
I mean, technically, KenPom agrees with Scott and San Diego State and both of you with Clemson. Right?
Does it have a
agrees
public,
with me in Alabama?
Have a public side?
Has a prediction.
Okay.
So
okay.
KenPom's got Arizona winning by 5. It's got UConn winning by 8. It's got North Carolina winning by 2 and Iowa State winning by 1.
Well,
so, if anything, I'm fading KenPom here. So yeah, I like that.
I fade everything I can. I fade everything I get my hands on.
I'm using
myself.
Dan's words kind of against, well, not against you, but like, yeah, I'm cool. Yeah, let's fade KenPom. I'm fading them. That's what I'm going to do here.
Hell yeah. They're too good.
But they are kind of.
Draws matter. I kind of like Iowa State here.
Hmm. All right, make your case. Mm.
Big Ten overrated, as Scott has said many times. Fair Illinois much. Beat a 14 and an 11. They beat Duquesne. Duquesne was not a very good team. They had a weird run at the end. They were not a good team. So I don't like Illinois' path to me, especially playing in the Big Ten and then having that. I think Washington State is definitely of the teams that these two have played was the better, is by far the best win. And Iowa State looked pretty good against Iowa State. They beat the crap out of Houston. I think they have some good wins on tape that look better than anything Illinois has done.
I just like if you're going to look at their path to these points, especially when we're got just a chalk heavy field, like they all played against weak teams, right? Like Illinois, like, yeah, Duquesne's not that good. Like that's not an impressive win. They beat the shit out of them. They beat them by 26. They were never – Duquesne never
fucking
showed up.
They were never in the
game.
Yeah, they never left the locker room.
But that's like a sort of expectation.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's not impressive, but it's like, okay, like, yeah, Iowa State beat the shit out of their first two opponents. Like, okay. So I'm just tossing out those results. Like they don't really matter to my analysis. Illinois has the best player on the floor. I think he's the best player in the tournament, really, Terrence Shannon. Absolute baller, averaging 27 since February. And I believe in strength and schedule, non-conference. And you talked about this point, Dan, about how the Big 12 juiced up their net ranking numbers by playing cupcake out-of-conference schedule.
Iowa State was the worst defender of everyone.
Yeah, 346 in non-conference strength of schedule. They played a bunch of just, like, soft-ass teams. And you look at away from home efficiency, which is something Eric Haslam charts. Iowa State can only play at home. They're 336 out of 362 D1 schools away from home, which includes neutral games. Illinois, 23rd. I'm with you. The Big Ten's overrated. But I also think the Big 12's overrated. And
it is. That's why UConn, actually, I might have been wrong when I said this. I thought UConn got a tough draw. Now that I look at now, like in retrospect, you go, did UConn get a tough draw?
Not really. No.
Not really. Yeah, I mean, the best teams were, like, conference-wise, they would have been way worse off getting, like, Duke as their 4 than Auburn.
And we didn't mention this. UConn's playing home games. They are. Like Boston is a
UConn, 50 miles away.
UConn's rolling out for that one, right? In Brooklyn.
I think, and the more we talk about this, I actually think UConn's going to mop up San Diego State, who also now has to travel across the entire country. I didn't change. I didn't make a pick initially.
Good. Well,
but as we're talking about this, San Diego State in the overrated Mountain West had a super easy path to get where they got because they also faced a team that got upset. Or faced a team that made an upset.
Upset somebody, yeah.
And they came out of the Mountain West, which has looked pretty terrible. And at least you could say this. I mean, look, I've trashed the Big East a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, all three Big East teams have looked pretty good. And those are all teams Connecticut's beaten. So they've had way more impressive wins. And I just think my whole thing is like, look, it's chalky, but I think UConn North Carolina is going to be a hell of a game, and I'm banking on that's what we're going to see. And I know you guys are against it, and I can't wait to talk off the.
I just hope they don't cover.
How much
they can go? They can go all they want. I just don't want them to cover. That's all.
Yeah, one possession game. Scott's calling Alabama UNC.
God, you guys are going to be so frustrated.
Miss some free throws.
If we're gonna,
they don't, buddy.
If we're gonna have the tough draw revisit discussion, I would say it's Purdue. We'll talk about them here in a few minutes, but that Purdue Friday. Bracket looks pretty tough. So my official best bets for the Thursday slate is I'm going Arizona -7, Alabama +4, and +105 Illinois money line. Let's move over to Friday.
Friday.
The Midwest and South region starting down south with Marquette, the 2 seed, playing 11 seed. The really only Cinderella team left in the tournament, NC State. The spread right now for these games, Marquette -6.5. Thank you. Total is 150.5. I'm going to be quick here. I don't have much on this game. I actually have a lean to NC State because it looks like Marquette can't really win by margin since they're not good at forcing turnovers. And I believe they're kind of a weak rebounding team. Marquette relies on forcing turnovers. They're not good at a couple things. I'm spacing out. I'll find it here, but I have a lean towards NC State.
Can I make a guess here before Scott goes?
No.
I think I'm going to say that he's going to say NC State is a public dog.
I actually agree.
I do think he's going to say that.
They are a public dog. And Dan, you've studied well. But they're also still that Cinderella team that I'm surprised is not getting a ton of love. A lot of people are on Marquette because of probably just the reputation and the fact
and
that
it's the seeding. It's a 2 versus 11, and the spread's under 10.
And that's exactly what I was going
to
get to.
That's the only thing keeping it from being like an obvious. But I think
that's right.
NC State winning the ACC and all the buzz about you know winning 5 games in 5 days. To me, I just look at it from a psychological perspective, and I go, first of all, NC State kind of in a weird way. Across the country, the North Carolina teams are just more well-known than the Marquette. I bet you most people couldn't tell you where Marquette is. I bet you they could tell you where NC State is. And as lame as that sounds, I do think there's a lot of that that comes into play.
You'd have to be a real dumbass to not be able to tell someone where NC State is.
I bet those people they couldn't, you guys. And then here's the other quick thing, though, too, is like, you know, if you look at NC State, I mean, everybody's talking about the Cinderella and how lucky they are to be here. That also sways the public opinion to think of, okay, Marquette's due for like just a bounce or a blowout. And so I just think it's also that spread looks weird to me too. Then if it's that different and Dan Palm or whatever we were talking about earlier, as we modified the name of that service, 6.5 seems easy. Yeah. 6.5 seems easy for the public to take, especially on a 2 versus 11.
So wait, I'm confused. Are you betting Marquette or
I'm taking NC State because the bet would be the public, and it's showing up in the figures. The public is all over Marquette because it just looks too easy on the 6.5.
I like Marquette here.
Good.
Yeah, I want to go Marquette because of my Big East bias, but this is something I'm just bringing up to Dan first right here now. I talk a lot of shit about the other conferences, right? But I think if you notice, I've never talked shit about the ACC. Like, I think the ACC is good. Like, no beef there. So I'm not. Like, I don't look at this like
this was
a huge
quote-unquote down year for the ACC, but I think it was a down year because everyone looks at Virginia, which was, you know, the fifth team that got in and goes, they sucked, and they did. Yeah. The bottom of the ACC was bad, but the teams that were at the top were still good.
I really like Pittsburgh. I like their profile. I was a little disappointed they couldn't make it. They didn't make it in the tournament, right?
They deserved it over Virginia for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree.
I mean, that was just a bad, like, everyone, like, that was one of those
that
ones
was bad.
Where the committee was like, please, Virginia, don't. And it was just so obvious to everyone else. And then it happens. Like, sometimes this happens in the NFL draft sometimes where you just look at a guy and you're like, I like Jamarcus.
He's not gonna
I
be
don't
good.
Know if Jamarcus yeah. Russell was a good one, but like
Laquon Treadwell, maybe him.
No, like, yeah. Zach he Wilson was one, right? Like, I feel like everyone in the public like looked at that and they're like, no. Like, that guy's not going to be good. Like, what are we doing here? Like, he's not going to be good. And then he just isn't. And you're like, yeah, sometimes the public sees something and the smart people, like, outthink themselves. And the Jets are like, no, we know something that you don't know or whatever. But, like, occasionally the smart people kind of outthink themselves a little bit. And, like, the dumb, obvious take is just what it just is. It just is.
Fair enough.
Well, then that's Marquette then, I guess, in this case, which I'm going to take NC State. Thank you.
I like Marquette.
Next game here, five seed, this is in the Midwest, five seed Gonzaga versus one seed Purdue. Purdue's opened at 4.5, up to 5.5. Totals at 154.5. Gonzaga was one of my picks to make the Final Four. I'm going to ride out with them. I'm taking the 5.5. Not sure about sprinkling on the money line. But Gonzaga's got two bigs they can throw at Zach Edey that will attack him. Different ways that hopefully can offset his production.
Purdue has too many white guys. Just say it.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm you bringing know. Up Fletcher and Braden in a second.
Their
don't worry.
Their best players are Fletcher, Braden, and Zach. I mean, come on.
Oh,
how
yeah.
good could that team be?
Yeah.
Zach Edey's foreign, though, isn't he? He's not. I mean, he's Canadian? He's Canadian.
He's Canadian.
That's not foreign.
He's not. Well, he's not U.S. I mean, he's non-U.S.
That's not.
So.
But, like, he's not European. That's a different style of basketball entirely. It's a different style of basketball.
Yeah.
He grew up playing like American basketball.
You both make great points here. I don't know.
Too many white guys. I like Gonzaga as well.
I look at. Yeah.
I'm guessing the public. I would be shocked if you told me that the public's not all over Purdue.
They are, Dan. So sweep it. I'm taking Gonzaga. And they just like Purdue and their run. They finally think Purdue's going to get over the hump and make amends for what they've done in the previous tournaments. And I think Gonzaga's just underrated here. And the spread looks good too. I mean, the spread started at 4.5. The public jumped all over. It's moved to 5.5, and they love it here. And so I'm taking the Zags, and I like the money line sprinkle at plus 185.
Makes sense to me. Like, you'll watch Purdue run a possession through Zach Edey, and then he'll just score. And you're like, why don't they do that every time?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's weird when they, like, but it happens all the time. Like, they want to run all these, like, cutesy plays and try to get, and it's like, that guy should get a touch on every possession because immediately he's a mismatch. No matter who they're playing, he's a mismatch, and he causes the defense to either have to double team, which is then going to leave someone open, or run a one-on-one against Zach Edey, which you're probably going to lose. And I'm always fascinated when I see how many possessions go without him touching the basketball, and I'm like, I don't get that.
Well, and he gets those points too, Dan, on the court where he knows where he is. So we can almost like just do a half turn fade away or turn around, and he doesn't even have to really look at the basket. He knows what he has to do to shoot it.
He sticks his arm up; it's at basket height,
and it's just like it's kind of like you can't stop him. But EK or whatever his name is on Gonzaga, like that guy can actually. He's played some good, tough one-on-one big man basketball. So if he gets Edey frustrated, that's when Edey tends to underperform. So, you know, we just got to get him knocked off his little perch here so far this year, which has been
dumb. I also think Gonzaga, I think a key here for this game is this is like a game that
three black on ball players.
No, if I were on, well, when I'm on Gonzaga, one thing I will be looking for is if I think Gonzaga needs to lead early. I think they need to make Purdue think that they have to go away from that inside game and start hitting, like start make Braden and Fletcher feel like they're the guys that have to win this by hitting threes. That is the key to winning. So to me, I think the key here, if Purdue gets up early, I know this is going to sound like a stupid, but like I almost think if Purdue gets up by like 10 at half, I might bet Purdue the rest of the way.
To close it out?
Like -2.5 in the second half money line, something like that? Or do you think it'd be plus for them?
They'll be plus.
No, it'd be minus. Honestly, if they were up 10 at half and the line was like 8.5, I'd probably just take the line.
Okay. Yeah, I got Purdue as a public favorite, but two sharp books, BetCrest bookmaker, have Gonzaga still at 5, whereas the legal books at 5.5. I like Gonzaga's athleticism on ball. Again, I like their bigs. Like you said, Graham Is it Ike? Is it EK?
EK.
He's actually got the second best offensive rating in the country behind Zach Edey. And they have another white guy, or another tall, big, white big, excuse me, Ben Gregg, who got inserted into the starting lineup after the first, like, 18 games. He's shooting 42% from three, and the guy is 6'11". Like, I don't think you're going to outscore Zach Edey, and I don't think like you're going to shut him – or excuse me, I don't think you're going to shut him down. So I think what teams should kind of need to do is give him buckets back. And I think Gonzaga can do that. So
they can. And you rotate a couple guys through there. I mean, EK and Greg can both kind of trade off, if you will. And both guys are pretty big. I mean, EK is a little bit shorter. I think he's 6'9", but, you know, they still can hang in there. I mean, he's probably 6'9", 250. So there's going to be some traffic.
And exactly. he's from white Colorado. And Asian.
Yeah, and he's from Colorado.
It's Canadian. So. That's like a beta version of white.
Yeah, it is. And Graham EK is from Aurora, Colorado. So it makes sense.
Good analysis, guys. All right, next game in the South, Duke, 4 seed. Another one of my Final Four picks, riding out with them in this one as well, as they play 1 seed Houston down there in Dallas, I believe. Houston's
I see Scott smiling because we already know where this is going. We already know the public's on Duke as an underdog. I don't even have to. I don't even know why you have a model. Like, it's pretty obvious. You look at these and go, like, I could tell you every time what Scott's going to say.
It's funny how you still lose, though, Dan. Why don't you follow the model? You know what it is.
It can't possibly be Houston. There's no way.
Let me pull it up right now. Let's see. Drum roll, please. It's actually going to be the public is on Houston as far as how I got it triangulated, barely. So I take Duke in this one, which I like.
Triangulated. I love it.
I like the Duke side. It's about 60-40 right now on the data. So. Duke is probably just coming in here a little bit less hot, say, than Houston, just from the seeding standpoint. But I think the fact, too, that this is 4.5 gives them a nice number to kind of get to if the game's close. And I think this game goes under, too. I just think this game is more of a chess match than people think. And so Filipowski's been coming on. And we've seen Houston, obviously, with that meltdown against A&M in the last game where they just, I guess, didn't care probably more than anything. I just think that Duke's got a little bit more fire and a little bit more to prove.
So you're taking 4.5 with Duke, right? That's the line?
Yep. Yeah.
Me too. I'm sprinkling on the money plus 160 money line as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, big problem for Houston is they can't stop fouling. I mean, it happened in the A&M game. They lost. They literally had like a walk-on shooting the most important free throws of their season because they had like four. And I get that sort of the refs were a little bit call happy, but if you look at even the Big 12 championship against Iowa State, one of their starters played 19 minutes and fouled out. One of their guards played 25 minutes and had 4 fouls. Like, they have a problem defending and not fouling. And that's going to be an issue. Kyle Filipowski, you can say what you want about him. I don't have anything great to say about him as a human. however, he knows how to get calls. He knows how to work refs, and he plays an inside game that I think is going to give Houston problems and I think is going to lead to some foul trouble. That's really going to be an issue for Houston. To your point, I kind of like the look of the under because I don't even know that we're going to see Houston starters on the floor for the 35-40 minutes that a lot of these teams play at this point of the season, because I think they're going to be in foul trouble.
Yeah, this game's going to be tight. Yeah, this game's going to be tight. I think it's a Filipowski type game. It's a Schreier type of coach game, and it just seems like it's one of those setups where Houston just falls a little bit flat here. And if one of those two guys, if it's Francis or if it's Cryer or any of those guys, like those guys, if they're out or Sheed. Those guys had terrible games against Iowa State in that final, and that's why they lost by, 28 points? So they scored 41 for the whole game in probably one of the biggest matchups that everybody's anticipating. So this team can fall flat, and I think Duke's the perfect team to put them in that situation.
Yeah, I'm on Duke here. Houston's just too small. Also very similar to Iowa State in the sense that they can't play on the road. And they played a really soft out-of-conference schedule. Houston...
Well, those games in Dallas.
Houston, since their center, I think, is like 6'8", 6'9", they should be running more because they're small. And they're 322nd adjusted tempo. So Duke is going to be able to get back, set its defense, and Houston's not a good shooting team. So... I don't really get how they're going to get points. They're just relying on forcing turnovers, getting easy buckets. But Jeremy Roach is a pretty good point guard. I mean, I
guys, I've also seen this so many NCAA tournaments, man. This is what happens. Like when I have a bracket, back when I used to do one or two brackets and I'd have a team I liked, if they struggled in the first weekend, even if they advanced, I would be like, my bracket's dead. Like teams that go on to win the title usually don't struggle in the first weekend. That's what I really like about Duke right now, is they absolutely put it to James. Like it, you want to talk, you mentioned Illinois earlier, but like Duke beat James Madison by 40 points. And I actually think James Madison 4-12 was solid. I mean, they beat Wisconsin. That was like, and it was a convincing win. It wasn't like
they were ahead the whole upset game. Yeah.
Like that was like James Madison's better. They're the better team. Yep. And I think they were decent and they absolutely never gave Vermont a chance. Like that's what you want to see. I hate that Houston struggled like they did against A&M. Like it shouldn't have happened. And it's a bad sign for them.
Yeah, I think they're pretty undisciplined. I don't know if that's coaching or just the players. And one thing, though, too, is this game is in Dallas. So there's going to be Duke fans there because they're spread out all over the country and the good education puts them everywhere. But still, Houston's up I-35 or down I-35, depending on how you look at it, north or south. And that, to me, though, gives them, you know, I mean, it's still American Airlines Center, but it's still a little bit homey, I guess, for Houston. I mean, it's an easy road for them to get to the Final Four.
But the home advantage isn't just crowd. Like, there's also sight lines and familiarity with the building and just, like, being on your campus or playing at a familiar venue. There's a little bit of that. But I'm with you in the sense that
kind of goes against your UConn argument earlier. They're home in Boston, which is not even in the same state as their campus.
Well, I just think the crowd is going to be just so overwhelmingly UConn. But to your point, like if you wanted, like it's UConn. There are many arguments.
Yeah, you're right. UConn is going to draw a bigger crowd in Boston than Houston will draw in Dallas.
Yeah, and also like there are many arguments to why UConn is an elite team, and then on top of it, it's like, and they're probably going to have the home court. Like they're going to have more fans.
They're going to give it to them. Yeah.
Whereas I think from a like a team profile, a program, I think Duke is better than Houston. And it's like, Houston's not going to have enough fans there where that's going to matter. I mean, they'll have more, but whatever. Like, I'm happy to take the points and sprinkle with Duke. That's where I'm at in it. Final game here, the Sweet 16, Midwest region. Late for you guys, 10:10 Eastern Standard tip-off. 3-seed Creighton playing 2-seed Tennessee. Tennessee's -2.5. I actually bet Creighton +3. The most units I've given out on like a one play is 2.2 units with the New York Jets opening night against the Buffalo Bills. I had no business winning that one.
And Rogers I did. Achilles? I mean, what did you bet on? Him keeping his Achilles intact? What was that all about?
I bet the Jets to win that game, I guess, outright, I think. And that got home and I had no Same business. I think this might be my biggest bet in OutKick history. I'm taking Creighton. I think the SEC is wildly overrated, and we're kind of seeing that. Everyone loves this kid, Dalton Knecht, or however you say that last name. But
got it.
Baylor Shireman is actually a better player than him. He's better by
clutch.
He's better by WAR. He's better by net rating. He's better by true shooting.
Let's be clear, though. How many white players does Creighton start?
Too many.
It's four.
I tweeted.
It's four.
I tweeted out about this. Like these MFers, this is not a Big East team. It pisses me off. That's fair.
But your biggest bet in OutKick history is going to be on a white basketball team.
They're going to love it.
He doesn't like. Yeah, he doesn't. That plays that style. He doesn't like that either. But I think it doesn't. It goes to show you it doesn't matter.
Let's look at their starters. They
play so well together.
We've got Mason.
So tight.
We've got Mason. We've got Baylor. We've got Ryan.
Ashworth.
These are great.
White as shit.
I mean.
Kalkbrenner.
Steven. It's actually listed as Steven. He doesn't even go by Steve.
Steven. Yeah, Steven Ashworth.
He goes
by
Steven. Yeah.
But there is Stephen A. Smith. But
Steven, Ryan, Mason, and Baylor.
Those are great. I don't see color in these names, but I also like the I like Tyler. Oh, yeah. I like Tyler, Elijah, Braden, Savion, Samir. Those are obviously more on the other team, but either way, Tennessee
Urban. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Urban Magic and Kareem. And I'll tell you that Tennessee though, to your point, Jeff, about just where the spread is, given that, you know, it's kind of steadied at 2.5 pretty much the whole week. Creighton off a great, awesome game against Oregon. And Tennessee really not, I don't think, facing anybody that tough so far. I mean, Texas didn't play that well, even though the game was close. And then St. Peter's was a joke. I love Creighton in this game. I think this is a team that just is playing some of its best basketball this season. And I think Tennessee hasn't really played anybody like Creighton.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Creighton is playing some of its best basketball this season. They lost to Providence in the first round. Well, the first game they played.
First game of the, yeah.
Tournament. A team that did not make the tournament. They beat Akron, and then they took two overtimes to beat Oregon. This is some of the – if this is some of the best basketball they've played all season, I'm fading.
Then fade it all you want, and we'll bet the house on it, because they also were at Villanova the week before, and then they were home to Marquette and beat Marquette when Marquette was five. That was on March 2nd.
At home.
Scott.
Yeah.
Creighton has a huge home. What's run Creighton's home numbers?
Hold on. Scott. Dan, you got to be consistent here, right? Because didn't North Carolina lose in their first ACC conference game to Boston College, who's not even there either?
It wasn't even close.
Who? UNC. Didn't they lose to Boston College in the NC?
UNC lost in the final to NC State, so I'm not really sure.
Oh, okay. All right, my bad.
No, but They played close to Boston College. They probably should have lost that game if they actually cared. But here's the other thing, too, is that this matchup is something where you've got the Tennessee defense. They haven't played somebody like Creighton. They haven't had a team like Creighton that's well-coached, that's ready to take on any kind of defense that Tennessee throws at them, which is it's like a stop-and-shoot type defense. And so if Creighton can move the ball around like they did against Oregon and how – those guys play together, not separately and not as individuals, I don't think Tennessee's got a chance to stop them.
Can you run Creighton's home court numbers, Jeff, please?
I'll just go to Eric Haslam for that. But give me 1 second.
Scott, keep spouting your nonsense for a moment while Jeff looks this up, please.
The model also says that the public was on Tennessee pretty much right when the spread came out and didn't move it. So that's another kind of interesting thing, too, is if to entice the public some more, they were piling on Tennessee early in the week and it didn't move the line. It just added a little bit of juice to Tennessee at 2.5, but that's a particular trap. And if you want to talk about best basketball recency, Dan Haru, we can look at the last two games of the regular season for Tennessee when they lost at home against Kentucky, who fell on their face soon after, and then lost to Mississippi State by 17 at home on Friday, March 15th, before the SEC tournament.
Yeah, but I didn't say that Tennessee was playing some of its best basketball of the season like you did for Creighton.
Well, they aren't playing. That's because they aren't. Creighton is.
I mean, but look at the gauntlet that Tennessee had to run before that Creighton just didn't. I mean, they did beat UConn.
That's a point I actually want to address here in 1 second. Yeah. But to answer your original question, Dan, according to Eric Haslam, Creighton's away from home efficiency is 284th in the country, but Tennessee's is 326.
Uh-oh.
So it's not like they're much better. And there was a stretch.
I mean, you guys both love Alabama. Tennessee went into Alabama 3 weeks ago and beat them on the road.
I think Alabama covers, yeah.
Alabama, I think they get a chance to win that game.
But the line's 3.5, so you obviously think they can win the game, or you're not betting
for sure
3.5 for a team that you think is definitely going to lose. That doesn't make any sense.
No, that's fair, yeah.
But they went to Alabama and beat them. Like, that's a better road win than I think would have at any point.
I think we're kind of wasting our time. Hopefully the listeners are enjoying this banter this bickering. Because, like, if you want, besides UConn, you could go through everyone's resume and actually Purdue and be like, this is a weird loss. I hear you. Okay. Tennessee had three straight losses at a conference to Purdue, Kansas, and North Carolina. They're actually somewhat close, single digit.
All of them were
single digit finishes,
but they were in November, and so who cares?
That there's a little bit of that as well, but they also got worked by all three bigs. All three teams have elite bigs. Zach Edey, Hunter Dickinson, and then Baycott for North Carolina. I consider Kalkbrenner an elite big, and I think he's going to have his way in versus Tennessee. And again, I think Shireman's a better. I think position by position, Creighton is better across the board than Tennessee.
God, you love white basketball, don't you?
I do.
I agree.
You love it.
They play together, and they're better coached, and that's why, too, I think.
Off ball screens, baby.
Now we're getting into some racial territory.
No, I'm just saying they're better coached. I think the coaches, I don't know what color the coaches are, who cares? I'm just saying Creighton's ready for this matchup. Yeah. And Tennessee has this upstart like feel.
Creighton doesn't have a black coach, I can tell you that.
There you go.
What's Rick Barnes' parents? What is he?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Like, making fun of Rick Barnes. Okay. Well, either way, I'm just saying Tennessee is the darling for the public. Tennessee is this team that's been around hanging out this year, and Creighton's been kind of forgotten, hasn't been ranked at times.
Yeah, because
and
they don't win anything ever. Creighton's been good before. They never win. They're not going to win.
But that's the knock on Rick Barnes, too. So doesn't that offset each other? Do you have a play on Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm going to bet Tennessee for sure.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
He's going hard on Tennessee.
No, hey, if you're going to put your money where your mouth is, that's fine. I thought you were just making the counter argument against
Creighton. I'm absolutely betting Tennessee. I think this is insane.
He's betting Tennessee hard.
The Creighton love is ridiculous.
I'll meet you in Detroit, Dan.
What's the
Little Caesar's Pizza?
Maybe I skipped over this, or I'm forgetting. What's your Tennessee argument?
You've skipped over the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I feel like you've been anti Creighton, but like, what's your pro Tennessee argument? It's just you're just outright fading Creighton.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He likes Volunteers over Blue Jays, and that's totally cool.
Hey, I can't hate on that. So, my best bets for Friday's slate, I'm going Gonzaga.
I also don't like that Creighton played a double overtime game, and I know like it's good for
they had a week.
I first of all, it's not a full week, but there's also travel involved in there. And
are you saying fatigue? Is that what you mean?
They went from Pittsburgh.
I don't think it helps.
To Omaha.
I don't think it helps.
Pittsburgh to Omaha, back to Detroit. I think it's all easy doable. I'd drive them if I could.
I don't think it helps.
All right. For the Friday slate, I like Gonzaga +5.5, Duke +4.5, sprinkled on the money line. And I got Creighton, and I'm betting them +3 and +140 on the money line. All those plays will be written and published to Outkick Bets over the next couple of days. Dan, do you have a best bet, 1, 2, or 3 to give out?
North Carolina's going to roll, man. Like I'm sticking by it. There's no question about it. It's my number one play this week. I will be betting way more money than I should, but it's risk-free investing, so no problems there. I would have to say, man, Tennessee. I like Tennessee, Gonzaga, and Duke all about the same.
Gotcha. And you'll be back for the Final Four podcast next week to answer to any of your losses and wins.
He's going to be embarrassed.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens, and then we can make a decision on scheduling.
Scott, what's the model say? What are your favorite plays?
My favorites are going to be San Diego State, Alabama, and Creighton. Cool. Those are my top three.
All right, guys, make sure you show us some love. Leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts for the Outkick Bets podcast and Spotify. Check out Dan Z's content at Outkick or on outkick.com.
Oh, and follow me at Real Dan Zach for all the updates from the Women's Sweet 16 in Albany, New York. I will be covering Women's Tournament for outkick.com. Look for all the Caitlin Clark, all the Kim Mulkey, all the Don Staley. I will be there starting Friday through Monday. I know y'all want I can't wait, Jeff. I know we're going to get into a Women's Sweet 16 preview here tomorrow. Wow.
There's got to be money in that. Dan, you've got to find a way to make money on that when you're there, and that's probably a dream come true for you, little girl.
I recommend Delmonico's Steakhouse and Colony on Wolf Road. Dan.
On Outkick's dime. I love that.
Yeah. Use your per diem or whatever they nickels. Give you their expense out to them. Scott, where can people follow your banter?
Find me on the couch basically this week and weekend. But if you want to do some online stuff at Scotty Markets on Twitter and talking music, food, and some sports.
All right, cool. We'll talk to you guys next week for the Final Four. Best of luck on your bets here. Let's make some money. Peace.